listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 163 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show, and today we're going to hear from Justin Evans, who is the co-founder and chief creative officer for Lander. Mastering has always been sort of an unknown in the process of making a record. As artists, we record an album, then we're very involved in the mixing process, and then we finish things off by sending our albums off to be mastered, where a lot of the times we're not exactly sure what is happening to it. It's also something artists tend to forget to budget for, which has made for an unfortunate side effect in that many indie artists skip this critical step in the process that really gives your music that final professional touch. At CD Baby, we have two options for you to handle your mastering. For a pro mastering experience where an engineer will master all your tracks, check out SoundLab. I'll put a link to SoundLab Mastering in the show notes. And if you're looking for something quick and affordable, that's where Lander comes in, to give artists an instant, cost-effective option for mastering their music. The cool thing is that you can now master tracks with Lander right from your CD Baby member dashboard. So if you have a song you want to distribute that is yet to be mastered, you can do so right in CD Baby and then distribute it out to the world. You get to hear what the mastered version of your song sounds like before you buy, so even if you're just interested to hear the difference, you can try it for free, so definitely check it out. I'm very interested to hear your feedback and thoughts on Lander. And since we did integrate Lander into CD Baby, and there's still a lot of questions about how instant mastering works, I thought it'd be great to have Justin on the show to explain the origins of Lander. So let's get to my interview. Well, joining me on the line is Justin Evans from Lander. Justin is the co-founder and chief creative officer there at Lander. How you doing, Justin?
Really good. How you doing?
I'm doing well. And we met at SF Music Tech, and if I recall correctly, you are in Vancouver, British Columbia.
No, I'm from there.
Oh, you're from there.
Ah, yeah.
I got it wrong.
I'm where Montreal is the
yeah.
Home.
Yeah, all yeah. Right. I knew Lander was in Montreal, but I thought you might still be in. Okay, but you're from there.
I'm grounded here. I've been here for 15 years ago. I moved here 15 years ago to make music and got stuck. So my feet got stuck in the ground here. It's a pretty great place.
Glad to have you on the podcast. Lots of people talking about Lander. We've just integrated with Lander at CD Baby.
That's so awesome.
I've been using it myself for some of my personal projects, and actually the bumper music I use on the podcast, I've been, I just write and record at home, and I've been running it through Lander, and it makes a huge difference in the quality.
Awesome.
So before we get to what Lander is exactly and how it works, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background as a musician and then how you ended up co-founding Lander?
So like I said, I moved to Montreal like 15 years ago to make music. It was a really exciting scene here. There was a really cool underground music scene and experimental music scene in Montreal. And at the time that Constellation Records came out of, and electronic music like Turbo Records, all this great stuff was happening here. And I was really drawn to it. And so I moved here, gave up on my design career to go into music full time, and had amazing, amazing, amazing time playing music in the scene here. It was like one of the best, kind of most, you know, you'd have people who you really admired and for years, and you'd just be playing on stage with them the next day. Like, it was such an open scene, and people were so great and so open and really into experimental music. So experimental music's really challenging, though, to make a living at, because, you know, the best commercial options you have are pretty terrible. So after sinking my life into that for, you know, better part of half a decade, I was in a lot of financial troubles, and really got into other stuff after that led me to doing some really cool stuff on the internet. But the cool thing was, doing experimental music also had huge limitations for what we could do. At one point I had a big band that was like an 18-person band, and it was really amazing, great players, super cool people, and recording was a challenge, paying for recording was a challenge, engineering was a challenge, mastering was a challenge. And so we had all this great music and we never ever got to put it out in the world. And I think that put like a kind of hunger inside of me really deeply that led to kind of what Lander became eventually. So doing that, playing music here and having a lot of frustrations about getting music to sound as good as I wanted to be, not having the money or the technical skills to do it. I was much more a player than a studio guy and got really, really, was really, really frustrated by those issues. And then went on to have this really successful career as an internet person doing like internet marketing and stuff like that with an agency I built here. Left that and really wanted to get back into the music world and went to a bunch of AESs and saw these students at Queen Mary University who were doing this mind-blowing stuff that solved all the problems I had as that experimental musician. So I saw my co-founder, Stuart Mansbridge, who was part of the C4DM, the Center for Digital Music. He presented a paper at the AES that was basically doing kind of big data and machine learning based sound engineering. It was mixing. And I was just like, wow, this is the future. This is the coolest thing I've ever seen. So I founded Lounder with him. Out of that, I went to the university and made a deal with the university with some help from a technology incubator in Montreal called Tandem Launch. And we co-founded the company to basically solve those problems I had as an experimental musician.
So for those people listening that may not know, what is AES?
AES is the Audio Engineering Society, and it's these great conferences. Anybody out there that hasn't been to one, you should go to one. It's awesome. It's where all the kind of, the students around the world that are doing really innovative stuff and the great masters are there. You know, like there's these great conferences where kind of the heroes of this industry talk and where the great, all the great new innovations are there. And then there's a little trade show and stuff, but it's really where the bleeding edge kind of technology and in the sound engineering world gets presented for the first time.
That sounds really cool. I'll have to check one of those out.
Yeah, it's so much fun.
So you said there was, you know, all those problems you mentioned, a lot of those problems are problems that every independent artist faces, from recording to mixing to mastering. So when you guys decided to get into that world, I mean, where did you start? I mean, how were you trying to address these problems?
It was super cool. So basically, the university, the students had built, it's really like the difference between what happens in universities and what happens in the real world is really a part of this story too. So the university students take a kind of, like, is it possible to have a compressor set itself? You know, is it possible to have a mixer, like the levels between tracks? You know, if you have a song, is it possible for a machine learning process to set the levels on the song and in a real time setting? And they had done all these experiments of this stuff. And there's a group of students that had done all this work. And, you know, the thing that's so different about that from the real world is that these are all isolated cases. So it's like, can this thing work this way? But if you hammer other stuff at it, it's not going to work. So I went and looked at all the technology possibilities and all this stuff, this research, and we were so excited about the possibilities. And then you go through this crazy process of going from this pile of research and patenting it and securing it and making a deal with the university and the students, so you got all that, to saying, oh my God, what does this stuff? You have this terrifying moment when you've got all that secured of, wow, what does this do in the real world and what's possible to do with this thing? And so we experimented a ton, had about a year's runway to make prototypes and figure out what it could do really well and what it wasn't good at and where it was possible. And partway through, I think from all our experience and from showing it to, one of the coolest things was bringing it to the music community here, showing it to everyone, all my friends that ran studios, all my friends that were musicians, and kind of it came really, really clear that within about a year that the mastering part of it was the thing that was the most exciting to turn into a product, because A, it's like the weirdest black box for most people anyways. B, it's super challenging to get without even the right shaped room, without the proper equipment. This is all stuff that algorithms can make up for. And so it's really hard as a musician who isn't fantastically skilled to solve this problem and to have, who has a bunch of expensive equipment. So we were like, wow, that's really cool. This is something that people need. And we really believed that we could get it to a really high quality from the research and what had been done, that this was the thing of the stack of technology that we kind of bought into that this was the thing that we could do some really exciting, we called it our moon landing, that we could do something really transformative and really exciting with. And so we doubled down on that, increased the research, really hit it hard, and then launched Lander a little bit over a year and a half ago. And since then, I think we made the right choice because we mastered more than 1.5 million songs. We've mastered hit records. We're mastering for major labels. You know, it's really, it's, we've got Nas as an investor, Hans Zimmer as an investor. It's pretty, you know, so I think we made the right choice. It's pretty, pretty cool.
So when you were originally at, you know, buying into all that research that you mentioned, you weren't necessarily just set on it just being a mastering product at that point. You were looking into like the mixing process as well.
Oh yeah, no, we were looking into all kinds of stuff, and I think the thing that led us to the mastering process as the key thing, and you know, there may be some mixing applications that we release later, but the thing that really led it to us, and this is awesome, like where it's a really cool music community story, is that, you know, it was really going to the awesome musicians in town here. That's another investor story. Like we were literally going to all our friends and all the people that I'd played music with or studios that I'd work with and saying, hey guys, what do you think about this? What if it could do this? And showing, like building all these little prototypes and saying, huh, what if it could do this? What if it could do this? And, you know, we did that, and Turbo Tiga, who's part of Plus 8 Equity, which is Richie Houghton and Tiga and John Aquaviva, all those guys, he heard about this through us doing this and came into our office and was like, this is amazing. This is super exciting. You know, how can I be part of this? And they came in really early as investors. But I think what was really awesome is what led us to the part of the mastering was that feedback from the music community. So it's really a product for musicians by musicians, and not just the musicians on the team here, but by the whole community of musicians that I live in, because we wouldn't have made what we made without that feedback.
I want to dive into some of the research that you guys did and that was conducted and how the algorithms built, mainly because I know that you've probably experienced this probably on a daily basis since you are the head of Lander, that, you know, the traditional mastering community has a strong reaction against something like this.
Fastco called us the Uber of the recording studio. You know, I think they feel like us, like taxi drivers feel about Uber. So for sure. Yeah.
That's a good comparison. That is a good comparison. And, you know, I know when we talked originally, when I met you, that you kind of went into that, and that's really what kind of intrigued me the most, is you were talking about how that went and how, you know, because a lot of people, they go to the site like, how can an algorithm, you know, I'm going to upload my track. And there's been, you know, in the past, really terrible instant mastering services where they just smash your track and put a smiley face EQ on it and say, there you go.
Still some out there for sure.
So I wanted to hear about how that research and how it works. You know, you don't have to give any away trade secrets, but I think it'd really help artists kind of understand, you know, because the mastering process, like you mentioned, is sort of this black box experience. Yeah. A lot of artists, you know, well, I think what you guys are doing is great, because a lot of artists have just been skipping that altogether, which is not great, but they just don't know what it is or how to do it. So tell us a little bit about the research, the algorithm, how you guys go about perfecting and adjusting for what music artists upload.
For sure. So when you go into a mastering studio, or whenever I've gone in, I've usually taken a reference material with me. So I go in and say, hey, this is this, like, you know, 70s guitar rock kind of feeling thing that I'm making. And this Neil Young record, you know, it's like, it's exactly what I want it to sound like. And like, can we get, you know, it's got similar instrumentation. It's got like a similar kind of arrangements. How do I get my record, you know, that next step to sounding like this with the mastering engineer? And they usually take that as a reference and then build a stack of, you know, processors and think about the way the EQ is on that record and think about the you know, how that worked. And they build that and they do that for your record. So we build Lander on a kind of similar principle, except the Lander system is both the mastering engineer and the record store friend that can pull the record that you're looking for. So when you put your record, your piece of music into Lander, what it does is it analyzes it against millions of songs that we've analyzed. So we've done this process. There's a cool self-learning here I'll talk about later, but basically we've created a genre space. This is what's called MIR. It's Music Information Retrieval, and this is the backbone of Lander. It's the same thing that's the backbone of things like Shazam and you know, things that recognize music, music recommendation engines. So basically it fingerprints your song and it then compares it to all the fingerprints of all the songs that we've analyzed for how to master songs. And it puts it in a cluster of songs. So it'll say, this song kind of fits around these sounds. So, you know, if you've got a Taylor Swift song, which we'd call a country song, you know, probably sound-wise and production-wise, it's more in a cluster of pop music. So it's listening to your music, breaking it down into musical features, the same way all these fingerprinting MIR things do, and then places it in relationship to this genre space that the research that the students did and we continue created. And then when it's there, it says, this kind of music would have this processor chain. So a hip hop track is going to have a different set of processors than a pop track would, or a country track or whatever. And it builds that processor chain the same way that sound engineer would go, oh, you like that Neil Young record? Maybe I should use this EQ and this compressor. So it selects a unique set of processor chains for you. And then it uses some really, really, really cool intelligence to kind of say, analyze your music, say, how much processing do we need to do? What kind of EQ should be on this because of what kind of music it is and where it fits in relationship to all that music? And it basically deduces from where it fits in the genre space that we built, how to make it sound, and then processes it.
So if I'm uploading a rock track and it's something I mixed at home and it's decent, but then, so your system would clearly identify it as a rock track, find some albums that are similar, and then say, wow, my track has way too much bass on it compared to those other ones, and would roll that off and adjust accordingly.
Exactly. And it would also then say, this sounds like this kind of group of music. So what's the, like, if I look at this group of music, these like 50 or 100 songs that this sits close to, what's the kind of EQ, overall shape of the EQ that this kind of music has? And how is this person doing it? Like, what is this person looking for in their sound? And it'll do that. It'll also say, you know, okay, this is a track, this kind of music would have a really, it's hard to talk about because it's a little bit more nonlinear than the way we're talking about it, but it's a good metaphor. But it's, you know, it's going to really look for what kind of, what ways that things should be processed in relation to the music that it lands near.
So if you know, an artist that uploads a hip hop track and an artist that uploads a classical track, the process the system's going to go through is going to be totally different.
And even the processors that it selects. So, you know, it might, in the case of classical music, might be, you know, very, very, very light touch with, you know, it probably won't do any EQ. It would be very, very light with a very transparent compressor. It's going to be really, really different than an EDM track, you know, where it's like totally, totally different set of how you would approach it.
Correct. Very different, different genres. So, you know, it seems simple and straightforward, and you know, you do give a couple of options when you upload. What are those options doing? I mean, you have, like, it seems like the way it's presented on the website is it's really just adjusting the level and maybe compression, but what's really happening when there's like three options I can choose?
Yes. Yeah, so you have what we call our intensity option, and this is, it's actually quite complicated. Like everything with Lander, it looks like nothing on the surface, and then what's happening underneath is like super complex. So the intensity is really our relationship to kind of how you feel. We didn't want to, it's the answer to the question. So, you know, like there's a Michael Bublé track, right? Mm-hmm. It could be processed like a super Katy Perry pop record, which it kind of winds up getting processed like, but musically, content wide, could also be sounding like a Frank Sinatra record, you know, which is going to be very light touch on compression, very light touch on loudness increase, all that stuff. Huge respect for the dynamic range. Or you could have it slammed in front of a speaker like he actually does produce it. We don't want to make that call for the user. So, and this is really about the loudness wars and about kind of transparency and respecting dynamic range, all these things. So with the same way that it selects, you know, all the processor chain for you, it's going to select three options that are from like kind of the most, you know, the low option there is really going to always be the most transparent, and the high is going to be the most slammed. but it's going to change depending on the original content, what the processes are doing.
And those options are pretty cool. When you upload a track, I should mention that, you know, you guys give a free preview and you can hear the original compared to, you know, just your first take. And then it gives you the options to adjust. And it is pretty interesting for some of the tracks I've used Lander for, where it's like, yeah, you can definitely hear that slamming it all the way is too much. And then maybe that middle one is better, or maybe the one where there's just a more dynamic range is the way to go.
Yeah, and it's cool because you always get the chance to hear it against your original too, like at the end of that process. So, you know, you even with the lower setting, quite often it's quite a dramatic difference from your original file.
You know, we mentioned that a lot of people, like in the traditional mastering world, are not typically fans because, you know, you mentioned that you're the Uber of the taxi world. So how do you tend to describe what you guys do to that group of folks, or try and win fans over and try the service?
I mean, I guess the thing for me is there's tons of people who do love it from that world. So it's not, you know, it's not night and day that way. Like we have a lot of pro studios using it, and there's a lot of pro studios that use it for different purposes than releasing final masters. So we find that a lot of people will use it in their mixing process as a kind of, they call it like second set of ears. You know, it's like you partway through your mix, you run it through to hear a quick master. Cool. Great. And use it to refine your track before you do your final mastering in a pro studio setting. So there's lots of people that use it that way that love Lander. And, you know, we have like really major film composers using it. We have like really pro studios, like mixers using it. They love it. You know, I think that the really, it's almost like an age thing, or I think people that have grown up with things like, you know, automations in Photoshop, people using things like, there's so much of machine learning technology that's part of our world now that people have grown up with that and these kind of things functioning. It's just like a workflow thing, and it makes your life easier and it makes it better. And there's no kind of, whoa, this is scary, can robots do art kind of questions that come up. It's just there, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that for me, generally, it's not do mastering engineers or do mixing engineers hate it. It's do people past a certain age hate it, or do people with a certain kind of aesthetic, you know, like the guys that are into all analog studios. But man, that's even been really interesting for me. Like some of the dudes that have the super hyper analog everything studios have been really, really welcoming and warm. Like when I've talked to them about trying to make Lander awesome and what we're trying to do and ways we can do it. So it's really more to me like, if you have a kind of resistance to change or a resistance to what the possibilities are, then sure, you know, you're going to hate Lander. But but there's people that really surprisingly, like really old guard folks that have been really, really, really welcoming us and been really excited about it. So I think everybody in the industry already lived through, you know, the Pro Tools, like, oh my God, you can't do that on a computer. You can't track in the box. Oh my God. You know, like, we've all been through that already. So I think we're at a point now where once people try it and see the quality, they're like, well, yeah, why wouldn't I use that for a bunch of stuff?
Well, you bring up a good point about testing out mixes. And I think, you know, as an artist, even if, you know, you are hiring a mastering engineer, that sometimes it's kind of interesting to throw a mix through something quickly to hear how it impacts the mix, because yeah. I've been, I think in just about every album I've ever recorded, when I've gotten it back from the mastering engineer, I'm like, who turned down that guitar? Who turned that up? Or who turned, and they didn't. It's just when they went through the process, the EQs and everything brought certain things out more than others. And
absolutely.
And it affects your mix. You're like, well, now I need to go turn that up or turn that down or whatever. So that is an interesting usage for it. Where do you guys take the product from here? You right now, when someone uploads, we mentioned they can preview, they can adjust a few parameters. Are you guys going to allow for more customization, or where do you go from here?
I mean, so one of the cool things about Lander is that it gets better all the time. So that genre space that I was talking about, every track that people put in kind of increases the knowledge of the system. So it's a self-learning AI, and it's really cool that way. You can really see, like, read reviews sequentially from our launch till now, and people are like, it's an interesting idea when we first launched, not sure, to, okay, this is actually sounding pretty good, to, whoa, this is crazy and it's going to change the music industry and it's going to keep getting better. And so our major concern is to make the mastering consistently get more accurate, better, sound better. We have a team of like amazing, amazing people here, and there's like, you know, a ton of sound engineers, a bunch of data science people, a bunch of really great DSP people. You know, for me, let's get that awesome. Let's make the mastering quality unbelievably great, like mind-blowingly awesome across every genre and across every micro genre. And then, you know, after that, I think we're really excited about doing full album mastering. We're working on that right now with machine learning. We're working on, you know, click and pop removal. Basically anything that mastering engineers do for the next couple of years, we're training the system on that stuff and learning how to do that. And we're really, really, really exciting. To me, my dream world, you can drop 10 songs in that you've thought of as an album. It's going to, maybe they're rough mixes, maybe they're whatever. It's going to clean them up, correct problems in them, put them in an album format, put in all the DIDs, like do everything you need, make everything look terrific, all the metadata you need, and just be ready for people like CD Baby to publish, you know? And this is really, we're really excited about that.
Well, cool. I look forward to seeing how you guys develop. You solved a big problem for me, and it was, you know, like I mentioned, I write and record a lot of just like bumper music and things that I use for the podcast. I'm not going to spend a mixing engineer to mix or a mastering engineer to master. And it's just, but it's still something that's useful, helping my music do something. And when I met you, I think it's been like a year ago, I was going, man, I wish there was something that would just let me master it in a nice way so I could use it, make it useful and put it in videos and stuff. And I really like the product. And Chris Robley, who's normally on the podcast with me when we have discussion episodes, he just did an album, and we did a blind comparison between what his mastering engineer did and the Lander tracks. And I had no idea which was which, and I actually picked the Lander tracks.
Awesome. That's great. Well, man, I mean, we're doing it for, like, no kidding, we're doing it for, like, really, like, in full-scale commercial releases, big records. Like, it's not a garage producer's thing anymore. We have, you know, Warner Brothers came in as an investor for us. We're doing tons of stuff with them. We're doing, like, I mean, it's really exciting. We're trying to make something that is a remarkable tool for people. And I think a lot of people have that experience. They're shocked. That was Tiga, man, when they did the test for them too. He did some blind tests and was like, wow, this is really impressive. So it's pretty shocking when people actually do that blind test. I really encourage people to do it, because as soon as they do, they're converted.
Yeah, and I will say that they were really close, but there was something in the one that the engineer had done that I thought the high end was a little crispy, and I thought, oh, that has to be the automated one. And I'm like, the other one sounds better. And it was the Lander one that sounded better.
That's awesome. It's really cool. That's great. Yeah. And it's really cool. It's, and I think this is where we get better too. You know, maybe if you threw in a Southern rock, you know, something that we haven't got a lot of data on yet that has a really specific kind of processors that would be used at that time period or whatever, maybe we're going to be less competitive on that. But man, the amount of coverage we've gotten since we launched and how much better we are at more stuff, it's pretty exciting, and that's just keeping growing all the time.
Well, excellent. Well, I'm happy to have you guys integrated into our CD Baby member accounts. People can master their tracks through Lander directly in their account, and it happens instantaneously, and your track is right there ready to distribute. So it's really cool.
Yeah, we're stoked to be there. Thanks so much, man.
It's and I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys develop. Are you going to be down at South by Southwest this year?
You bet. Yeah, we're doing a thing with ASCAP. I'm going to be on the ASCAP boat. So really, the songwriter community really, really, really loves Lander. It's our most kind of explosive market right now because, man, the competitiveness it gives you on your demos is insane, right? Like, your demos sound way better. So we're finding this huge growth market with the songwriters. So we're co-sponsoring this cruise with ASCAP, and we're going to be down there.
Well, excellent. Well, we'll have to hang out while We're in Austin because I don't make it over to Montreal all that often.
Oh, yeah, we got to get up here when the snow clears.
I'd love to. I hear it's a great city. So I just had breakfast with Frank at NAMM at Anaheim.
Awesome.
And so it was great to catch up with him. But anyway, we'll be keeping in touch and keep giving the independent artist community updates. And like I said, they can check it out in their CD Baby account, and it's all right there. And we'll maybe add some AB comparisons so people can hear the difference between tracks at the end of this episode. So thanks again, Justin. And we'll have to have you back on the podcast sometime in the future.
Great. I look forward to seeing you at South By.
All right. Thanks. Thanks again to Justin for coming on the podcast. As I mentioned earlier, you can test out your song with the Lander Mastering Tool for free. So just log into your CD Baby account to give it a try. If you don't have a CD Baby account, creating one is also free. Again, I'm really interested to hear if you've used Lander before and what you thought about it and how it adjusted your song. I've been using it for a lot of my song demos and the bumper music I write and record for the podcast, and it makes a huge difference, and I'm really enjoying it. So feel free to call our listener line at 360-524-2209. You can leave a comment at the podcast website as well, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And you can also use those same methods to give us any other feedback or comments or stories or anything you want to tell us. A shout out about the show, feel free to do so there as well. And I hope to hear from you. That's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. I'll catch you later. You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.